Lads, let's do it. Let's talk about video gaming because it is huge. It is a huge part of the entertainment industry. It's worth almost $160 billion in 2020. That is more than three times the size of the global movie industry. But like most forms of distracting yourself from real life, gaming can be addictive. Well, Dr. Romain Gadelrab, consultant psychiatrist at the UK's NHS National Centre for Gaming Disorders, is on the line now to talk about treating problem gamers. Dr. Gadelrab, you're very welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. How would you define a gaming disorder?
Well, I think it's worth saying initially that, you know, the majority of people do game without having any problems. But for some people, gaming can get to a stage where they're unable to control their gaming. They're giving it a priority over other things in their life. And then that can start causing problems. And that's where we start calling it a gaming disorder, which might need some professional help from a clinic like ours.
Okay. Who is most at risk? Are children most at risk?
I think what we're seeing in the clinic is mostly young people. We work with majority of teenagers, often the majority being boys. Many of these are still living at home and prioritizing sort of gaming and spending time in their online worlds more than their kind of real life pursuits, kind of neglecting hobbies, not seeing friends in the real world as much, kind of affecting relationships with their families.
Okay. Can you tell me about this clinic? When did it get set up and how busy is it?
So we're actually really busy. We have a huge waiting list at the moment and we'd love to help more people. So it was set up about 3 years ago, initially in the pandemic, kind of forced us to move online, which has actually been quite a blessing because we've been able to see people all over England and meeting young people in a space that they're comfortable with. So, you know, I've spoken to young people from the top bunk of their bedroom where they feel safe, talking to me online over Zoom. It's been incredible to really help young people who've been struggling with gaming disorder.
Are you in contact with other countries that have similar clinics or doing the same kind of thing? And I mean, do we have much data on the scale of this problem?
So I think gaming disorder is recognised as a worldwide sort of phenomenon, but, you know, it really does vary due to the sort of like cultural differences that we're seeing in different countries. I think worldwide, I've seen academic papers state up to 2% of people could be suffering with gaming disorder, which really is millions and millions of people if we think about it. So, you know, it's something we need to start kind of bringing more attention to and making sure that we can help people where they really need it.
Okay. So if parents are listening or people are listening and they have a gamer in their house, what are some of the signs that your loved one might have a gaming problem?
Of course. So at the beginning, I was saying that people might be able to, they start losing control, shall we say, of their ability to stop gaming. So we see people gaming all night, for example. So some of the young people are then refusing to go to school because they've been gaming all night. For others, you might notice that they're tired. They might start neglecting themselves. So being able to game that extra 15 or 30 minutes before school instead of having a shower or brushing their teeth. So that's things that, you know, parents are quite distressed when they see that. Some people are kind of slipping in their grades at school, rushing through their homework, no longer taking part in activities they used to love, like sport, staying in all weekends. I've had young people refuse to go on family holidays, refuse to come down for a family meal, so their parents are having to leave food outside their door. And kind of like worst case scenarios, we're seeing people who then, when parents try to put in some restrictions, kind of verbally or sometimes even physically aggressive. Very sadly, we've seen violence. In the clinic, you know, when parents are trying to limit access to the gaming, they want the best for their young person. And it can lead to a lot of frustration from their side and sometimes anger towards their parents.
I mean, that is quite extreme, isn't it? I suppose you definitely need to seek help when you get to that level. Is there preventative measures parents can do for their kids before they get to that stage? I mean, you know, I suppose not buying a gaming console, but that's just it's not a reality, you know, if they get it from Santa or a family member or whatever. So how do you manage that? Let's say a game console has just come into your house as a parent. What would you say?
Of course, it's so tricky. And, in the clinic, we don't say you have to stop gaming altogether because it's not realistic. Like you say, that's being part of a young person, it's part of popular culture. They're talking about games in the playground. But it is interesting because we've seen that so many people that we have seen start really young. They have that fascination in screens from a young age. So I think it's just being quite conscious about boundaries that you're putting in when you do bring the technology into the house, and kind of laying some boundaries of the expectations of you to come down to dinner before, you're going to go up gaming, or some people almost make a contract with their young person around that. But also just learning a bit more as a parent about the games and what your children are doing online, because lots of young people are playing as teams, and the area I see the most frustration is when a parent comes along and says, "Right, that's."
Oh, I think we've lost you. Can you hear me? We'll try and get Doctor back online. Stay with us. Now, before the ad break, we were talking about gaming, and I just want to say, if you'd like to get in touch right now on 51552, if you have any concerns about someone in your household who is gaming, please get in touch, because on the line now is Dr. Romain Gadelrab, a consultant psychiatrist at the UK's NHS National Centre for Gaming Disorders. And we were having a conversation before we were rudely interrupted by a very bad phone line. Hello, thanks for bearing with us on that one. Now, before we lost you there, you were talking about these groups online that kids play in. And you said the problem with parents when they say they can't game, and then you got interrupted.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about that. Thank you for having me back. So yeah, I think I was just saying that, now that gaming has moved online, video gaming has moved online a lot of the time, young people are playing with other people, against other people. So they're very much part of a team. So if you're a parent and you come along and you just turn off the Wi-Fi in the middle of the game, you've essentially embarrassed them in front of all their friends and the people they're competing against. And I think that can lead to where we're seeing, real irritability and upset. So I'd say for parents, it's just trying to understand gaming a bit more yourself. Look online, there's lots of videos. You can look at our website for some really helpful resources. So that's probably a tip I'd have from starting out.
Okay, that's a very good tip. Can we talk about loot boxes? Because I've heard about these. And in your experience, I mean, is this a draw into a gaming disorder or even an introduction into gambling?
I think loot boxes is really important, and it's gaining a lot more of media attention. And for anyone who doesn't understand what they are, they're basically kind of rewards and items in video games that you can pay for with real world money. I almost think of it a little bit like a Kinder Surprise. So the young person pays for this loot box, and then they get randomized content, like a randomized prize, which you can imagine is really exciting. And sometimes that helps them progress in games, for example. Certainly lots of academics looking at this are thinking it could be a sort of gateway to gambling perhaps in the future. And I think a lot more research is being done into this for
sure.
Wow,
scary stuff. Okay. Is there any positives to a kid gaming? I mean, we've heard like problem solving, and, they tend to find a community online that they feel comfortable. Seeing any positives in gaming?
Yeah, I've definitely seen positives in gaming. So yeah, there's some educational aspects that may be possible depending on the game that's chosen.
Okay.
But like you said, many young people became completely isolated, especially in times of the pandemic. They were able to catch up with their friends, build communities. A lot of the young people I see turn to gaming as a refuge. They might have had difficult things going on at home, and they might have moved house, moved country, and they're seeking their communities of people with shared interests online. So there are definitely some positive elements.
Okay.
And we wouldn't say that we say everybody has to stop gaming. That's certainly not what we're advocating for.
So tell me, what kind of treatments are used to help patients gain perspective, I suppose, on their gaming?
That's exactly what we're trying to do. So like I said, with most addictions, we might say you have to be abstinent, but that's not what we do here at the gaming clinic.
Wow, okay.
Really, that's too off-putting for young people. So we try to aim for a limit of up to 2 hours a day of gaming. They still want to be able to talk about games, take part in those discussions at school, but actually get enjoyment from it, because you'd be so surprised that the amount of young people I see that could be gaming, some even 12 hours a day, they're not enjoying the gaming by that point when it's taking over their lives. So the clinic works really closely with families. We also do some workshops with schools, social workers, to try and help everybody help young people. And we have a sort of cognitive behavioral model, which is the main way we work, looking at the young person's thoughts, behaviors, You know, any urges, how might they cope with their urges to gain? How might they work on their problematic behaviors? What are their motivations? Do they really want to completely neglect school, no longer play football, no longer see their friends because they want to stay in the whole time? Like, is that what they really want to do with their lives? And try and get them reintegrated back into family life, back into their social lives as best that we can.
I just got a text in on 51552 saying, our three lads only get games at the weekends, this person says. For me, as a gamer myself, I find the chat option is really where the unexpected, inappropriate behaviour happens. I warn them not to reveal their age or location so people don't know. Would you say that that would be the case? What is it? The chat options available on these games?
So there's a danger. Many of the games now, yeah, people can chat. They can speak with their voice, or they can kind of chat in chat boxes, or they're in gaming associated groups alongside their games. That may be possible. There are more and more games that have like parental controls that are worth looking into, you know, and many of the games you have to prove that the young person is over a certain age. So I think those things are really important. But it's something that's being looked at wider. You know, how do we keep the internet a safe place for our young people? Really important. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. And I suppose that parent, I presume as a parent who texts it in, is has an advantage because they're a gamer themselves. They're educated.
Exactly.
They know
yeah.
exactly what these things are. How often is treatment successful when young people come into the clinic?
It's, you know, we've just seen such impressive changes in people's lives and shifting their priorities. It's just been like really incredible to see. I've seen so many young people go off to university and thrive and reestablish kind of relationships with their friends and families. But
amazing.
It does take a lot of work. And you know, they have to be motivated as well. Like with all therapy, you know, motivation really helps them as well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. You did mention that there's some good information on your website if anybody's looking for some. Can
yeah.
you just let us know what that is?
Of course. If you just put into search engine the National Centre for Gaming Disorders, we're the only NHS service in the country. So we've got a list of resources on there. And it's been so great to be able to talk about our clinic today. Thank you so much.
So great to have you on. Thank you so much. There we go. That is Dr. Romain Gadelrab, a consultant psychiatrist at the UK's NHS National Centre for Gaming Disorders. There we go. Really interesting and enlightening. And I hope that will give you some help. And remember to check out the website if you need some more information.
Jen Zamparelli on RTE 2FM.